You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
What's this button do? Whoa!
You are now entering the green world.
Last month, Professors James Renwick, Simon Hales, Rebecca Priestley and Alistair Woodward produced a briefing calling on urgent action on New Zealand's climate policies, given the vast direct and indirect impacts of climate change on human health. For Green World this week, I spoke with Victoria University of Wellington Professor James Renwick from the School of Geography, Environment and Earth Sciences about their report, going into depth about the health consequences of climate inaction. What are some of the changing weather patterns and consequential impacts that we are witnessing in New Zealand and across the globe that you're most concerned about?
Great question. The increase in extremes, broadly, you know, the weather is becoming harsher worldwide. The winds are getting a bit stronger. We've seen that very recently here. Droughts are getting drier, floods are getting wetter, heat waves are getting hotter, all of these things, and they combine to increase the intensity of fires. I mean, we've seen that in the North Island just in the last few days. Droughts, impacts on food security, water security, and human health, human livelihoods. So we're making our environment harder to live in. That's what's happening with climate change here and around the world.
Like you've mentioned, some of these weather events, I mean, most recently we've seen these fires in Tongariro. Yeah. We've also seen the dust storms across the world, but also we had the intense wind throughout New Zealand and in the South Island. Can you explain in particular with regard to human health what the consequences of the increased frequency of these events are?
Well, I think that's a big question. There's a lot of consequences. So in terms of heat waves, well, heat is the biggest killer of people. People not being able to cool their bodies down enough in some parts of the world at some times cause thousands of deaths every year, maybe millions these days. And the air, you know, it carries air pollution, it carries disease spores, it carries mosquitoes that carry disease, all of those kind of things. So the spread of air pollution and the spread of disease is broadening as the climate changes as well. And these have obvious effects on our health in terms of contracting disease or having respiratory problems or even cardiac problems. Temperature increase and air pollution have been linked to issues with people's heart health and respiratory health as well. There's just a multitude of effects. And one actually that doesn't get talked about so much but is mentioned in our little report is the psychological impacts. You know, just the knowledge that all this is happening and worry about the future, eco-anxiety, flight shame, all of those things. But that's more of a burden to think about. You know, it keeps people awake at night, basically, and disrupts our sleep, disrupts our thought patterns, makes us more anxious. All of those things have effects on our physical health as well. So yeah, look, it's a very broad picture around the effects of climate change. And it's, you know, it's not as though here in Aotearoa we are affected equally by all these things, or indeed that the world as a whole is affected equally. Like a lot of things, you know, the impacts are distributed very unevenly, and often the people who have done the least to cause the problem are the ones suffering the biggest consequences. It's a complicated picture in that sense, I guess. In some parts of the world, these impacts are already to the point where, yeah, we might make some parts of the world uninhabitable, or at least very unpleasant to live in. You know, you could say there are some parts of Australia that are already unpleasant to live in, or the Persian Gulf, you know, where it gets extremely hot, and yet people live there, and they have ways of coping with that. But when it gets to be, you know, 50 degrees temperature plus, and high humidity, it's just actually dangerous to be outside. Your body cannot cool itself and you'll die pretty quickly. And those areas, those places where it's just not healthy to be, are going to expand, and we're going to make, I'm pretty sure, some parts of the hotter parts of the world just too hot, too humid, too tough to live in. So people are going to have to move. And I suppose that's another, you could say, another health effect, displacement of people through that kind of thing, and through sea level rise, you know, another aspect of climate change, eating away at our coasts and eating away at the land, people either live on or grow food on, and so large numbers of people over time are going to have to find somewhere new to live. This is already happening in the Pacific Islands. Some of the island nations have already relocated some villages away from the coast. The capital of Indonesia, Jakarta, is being moved. This large city is having to shift because mostly sea level rise and the effects of extremes. So they're shifting it a long way. It's a major project, and we're going to see this kind of thing having to happen around the world more and more. And you know, here in Aotearoa, most of our population centres are pretty close to the coast, pretty close to sea level, and our main cities, Auckland's an obvious example, are going to have to find ways either to defend themselves against this or shift large parts of the downtown area to higher ground. And that has, I guess, again, psychological consequences. You know, moving away from your whenua is always hard for people. Unless, of course, we can get on top of emissions of greenhouse gases and stop climate change from getting any worse. But there's no sign of that happening yet.
Yeah. I plan to ask you why it was so important to kind of frame this in a health perspective. But I realize as you're speaking that kind of everything to do with the impact of climate change is health related. Like if you're having to move because of the weather or the extreme natural disasters that are destroying your home or making it uninhabitable for you to live where you live, all of these things are so connected to health and psychological health as well. I wanted to talk a bit about New Zealand's context as well, especially in terms of our policy and our governmental decision making on this topic. The latest announcement in this space, I suppose, it relates to the Climate Change Response Act. What are your thoughts on the government's decisions around this act, removing public consultation and advice from the Climate Commission on our reduction plans?
I'm not impressed. I think I've been quoted in the media saying it's worrying. And it is. The Climate Change Response Act, the revised version that came in 2019 that set the zero carbon target and set up the Climate Change Commission, these are really world-leading efforts at a policy, political level, and that was great. But this present government has just been chipping away at all of that over the last few years or since they've been in power. You know, all of the parties supported these changes in the legislation 6 years ago, and that cross-party consensus has gone away. So, yeah, weakening the role of the Climate Change Commission, which was set up specifically to advise the government, is a real backward step, makes the Climate Change Commission less relevant. Cutting out public consultation, also not good. It's a real feature of the commission's work, talking to people around the country, what do you think about what we're planning to advise the government on? So the people had a real voice through the commission, and that's at least going away. Combine that with the reduced targets on methane emissions cut, you know, that's halving the targets for reducing methane. It all adds up, along with other policy changes like, you know, cutting out the subsidies for electric vehicles, raising speed limits on roads, building more and more and more roads, encouraging people to drive cars, basically petrol-powered cars. This is all going to add to our emissions profile. It's going to get in the way of the action we need to take. So I'm pretty unimpressed with the direction the current government's gone in. And I'm just reminded that just a few months ago, the International Court of Justice came up with this landmark finding that government's failing to act on climate change. They said, in very careful wording, that may constitute an internationally wrongful act, i.e. it's illegal, essentially. Illegal's too strong because there's no government police force who are going to come and arrest the New Zealand government. Unfortunately, but it really signals what we're talking about here. This is a serious problem. I mean, it could not be more serious. Governments around the world really need to step up, and instead the government of New Zealand appears to be stepping back, which is very, very unhelpful.
Are you at all hopeful that we will see the step up in commitments that we're looking for at this month's COP30 or maybe at any future event related to international cooperation?
I've almost given up hope, I'll have to say. I shouldn't say that in public, but, you know, this is COP30. It's the 30th one of these annual events. There's been an awful lot of talk. And, you know, things have been achieved. The Paris Agreement was a great achievement from a policy point of view. We've had this loss and damage fund set up and the mechanism for people to pay money into it. And there are many other sort of policy steps that have been taken to get us on the road to reducing emissions. But the emissions of greenhouse gases, which are driving all of these problems, keep going up. You know, they are double what they were back in 1990 when all of this COP business and the IPCC and everything got started. So in the time we've been talking about the problem, we've made it twice as bad as it was before. So I really wonder what it's going to take to turn that around. It was a hard problem in 1990. We've made an incredibly hard problem now. To stop the warming at a level that's manageable is going to take some pretty miraculous interventions. I noticed that the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, in his way, he's a very good speaker on this, he said at the opening of the COP meeting in Brazil that, you know, failure to get on top of this problem will never be forgiven. And I think that's right. You know, it's such a serious problem that it will disrupt human society worldwide to such an extent that the survivors of it, and we do have to talk about survivors, I think, will look back and think, what were those people in the 2020s and, you know, the 20th century thinking? They knew what the problem was, they knew what was happening, and yet they just kept going. And, you know, instead of being the saviours of the world, we could be, if we get on top of it, we'll be the villains of history. And, yeah, that's not a nice thought. But these are the stakes, you know. It's an incredibly serious issue which seems to be treated as a bit of a nice-to-have, action on climate change by most governments. If we can afford to do it, we'll do it. But, oh, the economy needs to grow first, so we'll worry about that down the track. And I've been hearing that sort of rhetoric for decades now. The economy here has grown a lot since we first started thinking about this, and yet we never seem to quite have enough money to do something useful. And of course, there's always urgent short-term issues to deal with, you know, the health system or the cost of living crisis or whatever it might be. And those things do have to be addressed, and you've got to spend money on them. But if you don't also, at the same time, spend money or move in the right direction on climate change, all of these other problems are just going to get worse and worse. So it's a smart move, economically as well as, well, in all directions, actually, politically, to take action now. It's going to be cheaper to do something today than it will be tomorrow. And the savings we can make from avoiding all of the costs of extreme events and impacts and so on far outweigh the perceived cost of doing something now. In fact, it's not a cost. It's an investment. We need to invest in our futures, basically, to save our ways of life. Otherwise, we will not have them eventually.
I mean, for those listeners who are obviously and reasonably feeling this increasing pressure relating to climate inaction and the observable effects of this, like you mentioned before, what would be your message for people who probably feel a bit jaded about this conversation, especially with so little action happening on the international or national level?
What I would say is, don't give up hope, you know. Don't despair, because that just plays into the hands of the oil companies. Humans have 100% of the power in this problem. We're the ones releasing these greenhouse gases into the air. We're the ones burning the petrol and so on. We can stop doing that anytime. Any individual can take some action, whether that's, you know, walking to the shop instead of driving the car or whatever it might be. You can reduce your personal carbon footprint a bit somehow. And it's well known that taking a bit of action helps people to feel empowered, and that's really how we need to be feeling. And probably the better thing to do is let your MP, let your political representative know how you feel about the problem. If everybody got on the case with their MP, emailed them, wrote to them, phoned them up, whatever, there would be more action taken. Parliamentarians, politicians do what people tell them. If enough people tell their political reps, we need more action on climate change, then we will get more action on climate change. We need to break through the kind of silence on this and really get a broad conversation going in this country and really push for action. So get out there and protest on the street, email your MP, make a bit of political noise. I think that's one of the very best things anybody can do.
That was Victoria University of Wellington Environmental Science Professor James Renwick on the health consequences of climate inaction.
That was The Green World.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.